as well as Clawkeenia Village Corporation. To keep this rolling, I'll have to add lip a little. I didn't have time to really get this all written down. Essentially, what I want to comment is, where are we in regards to history? I'm not a Christian, as I know I should be, but I do know that there's far too much that is showing up right now in the world today in the news that tells us we're in what his Bible tells us is the end times. In the book of Matthew, from approximately the 17th chapter through the 23rd chapter, Christ speaking tells us what is coming during this period of time. Essentially, end times as we know it. He culminates it in the 24th chapter, chapter 24, 32 to 34, and he tells us to learn a parable of the fig tree. It says that this generation will not pass till all these prophecies be fulfilled. And what is that fig tree? I am married to a Jewish girl, and my children, two daughters, are Jewish. And in their books on a Hebrew upbringing, it depicts the nation of Israel's downfall by a fig tree with its branches broken. The rebirth of this fig tree, or the rebirth of Israel, which was 1948, is what this parable is about, I am certain. It says that this generation will not pass till all prophecies be fulfilled. All prophecies to include a 7-year tribulation period as well as the return of our Lord. The rebirth of Israel was 1948, going on to 40 years of a generation of a woman. That puts us on approximately 1988 or thereabouts, but this is essentially too close a time period, for there are certain things would have to happen. It tells us all Jews will return to Israel before this 7-year period starts, and that has not happened. So it goes on to that of a man, I personally believe, which is 50 years in the Bible, puts it at the year 1998 or thereabouts. And I personally believe, I've run across scriptures that depicts and mentions, I am certain, the natives of Alaska. And I'm drafting up a report concerning this for my home corporation as well as the AF of N, which a friend of mine has asked me to send copies to. Remember, one of the things that it mentions in this, during this period, it tells of an economic collapse, which essentially goes right along, as I mentioned last night, with what the oil companies have said. The cost of home heating fuel by 1991 will be 21 times what it was in 1982, or approximately $20 a gallon. The books of the prophecies of Daniel and also the book of Revelation tells us that the cost of food alone, it says a denarius for a bushel of wheat. Denarius in the Bible tells us is the biblical equivalent of a day's wages. Essentially, they're talking about an economic collapse which is coming, and if those of you have listened and read of Howard Ruff's economic predictions, he gives it just approximately 5 years down the road. And if you go by what the Bible says, according to the way I've been reading it, this 7-year period will start approximately around 1993 or thereabouts. And I certainly have strong feelings that our corporations are a gift from God, and it's specifically for this period, to take us through this period that is mentioned in the Bible. And I have quite a bit of information written down concerning this matter. I'll close at this time on this. Thank you.
Looked at ANCSA from an ecological and now a biblical or prophetic perspective, and if others have more specific concerns that they'd like to discuss, I'd welcome those at this time.
I'm Matilda Kushnick. Everybody knows me by Tilly. And all my dear friends here, brothers and sisters under God, and Mr. Berger and your staff, asked how the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act affected us on our hunting and fishing rights. We were not given the opportunity to vote on the hunting and fishing rights. So far, the effect we have is the timber cutting. None of our native corporations are benefiting from it. The only ones benefiting is the white man. Seems to me we just give the timber to them for nothing. As it stands, we're in the hole. It's going to take us many years to come out ahead and get this, and yet this white man, white people are like Sealy, rich, building condos here in Ketchikan, buying sawmill in Wrangell from the other native corporations on the coast. All our main people running our corporations, most of them are white people and getting rich, and we are starting back to when we first started Land Claims Act. We are right back where we first started. We are not receiving anything. We see our timber going and no money coming in. I would like to see something done about this. Some looking into by our federal government. You look at our situation. Situations of Alaska Natives today is absolutely terrible. Our economy, for instance, the fishing canneries, Huna, Angoon, Cape Cloak, Heidelberg are all shut down. That was our only source of income for our native people. You know, I didn't add this down. Our people used to make a living off fishing. Down, I wrote down in here further, but the young people worked in the canneries, the women worked in the canneries, and Sea Alaska bought all the canneries down the coast of California and benefiting white people. Our money is revolving right back into white man's hand. This was our only source of income for our native people. Reason too much politics in the fisheries today. Our native people are the hardest hit. We depend mostly on fishing, that's all we know, and subsistence right. Now I feel we have suffered enough on this fishing situation. Canada, Mr. Yu, Canada, Washington claims our fish. We have more streams in Southeast Alaska. We have rivers here in Alaska, all species of fish. I feel the federal government should look at the hardship our native people are having right now. There are only about 127 Sea Alaska shareholders holding permits. 62 are gillnets, very few power troll and hand troll permits.
What are those figures again?
About, I'm not sure, mm-hmm. It's about that figure.
What was
127
the figure?
Permit holders, about 62 gillnets, very few power troll and hand troll permits. Our communities are suffering. We are supposed to be the richest Indians in Alaska. You folks all hear it all over the world. We are far from it. Our goals for the Alaska Natives' future, I feel for the future, we have worked with the, we should work with the IRA to find ways to save our land. My mother and father are gone now, who helped fight for our land settlement. They did not receive anything from the land settlement, nor have we. I feel that having all these corporations have not invested wisely. for instance, the canneries along the coast of California. We should not log our own timbers. I feel we should put it up for bids. That way there will be no white people getting rich off us. The managers and the administrations eat up all the money. Without those middle people, our native people will receive dividends. And the roads we have to build go to contractors at a good price. In the end, the state will take over these roads. I feel the state should help pay for these logging roads. I own 200 shares in Sea Alaska and 109 shares in Cape Fox Corporation. Right now, we are on the bottom where we started. 1991, I want to own all my land. And I don't want to give any of my land or anybody's land to any white man until 1991. If I want to sell him an acre, I'll sell it. And is there a reason why and which way you could help us here? Are you coming here to see what our problem is so you could brainwash us later on?
No, I'm here to listen to your views. And based on what you and others here in Ketchikan and people at other meetings I'm holding around the state tell me, I'll write a report based on what you say, and I'll indicate how I think you should go about solving some of these questions that you've raised.
Our native people used to put up their own food. They limit our people to 10 pounds of fish eggs. That's the beginning of putting up food. Next thing, we put up hooligans, you just limit so much. Next thing, it comes to canning food, we only get so much for on subsistence, 10 fish. And our people never depended on food stamps or welfare until this land claim settlement was settled and took all our rights of working and putting up our own food. We supported ourselves. We never had to depend on nobody to feed us. Now, this land claim settlement has put a lot of our people on a hobo list. We never knew what breadline was, and only what we've seen in the movies of down south where the people go up for a soup. Now we even got some, now there's no natives going there, but the people from out of state, they should not come up here and live off our land. They don't belong up here. That's my gripe of all these hippies coming up here. They should go back where Columbus landed. So help me God.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
My name is Alfred Aniskett. I was born under my grandfather, Peter Aniskett, the time the Russian had him raised from the time he came from British Columbia. And he's part of Canada. That's where he came from, up around Stikine River. And the Russian have raised him for him to go to school. Now this is how it happened, just like what my auntie have said there. When the Russian and the Indians got into fight over this land that we got, that was paid to us, or in other words, I look at it this way. The agreement was signed by the Russian and United States. Where's the agreement now? Who's got it? If we get that agreement out, then we got something behind us. That way they ain't gonna tell us what to do. The United States, the time they bought Alaska. The Russian have told them, you treat the Indians just like the way I treat them. That's what the Russian have told the United States. So he said, I'll do best I can. Now look what they're doing to us now. Every land we got, just like what my auntie say there, there's quite a few things behind us. If I ever tell every one of them right now, I'll let you guys know. Or in other words, I know what I'm talking about. I was raised by my grandfather, was raised by the Russian. I'm talking about this land claim now. How many of you folks got a land that's got Anaskit Point in it? I want to see. I got a point that's named after my grandfather. He put it there. If this government ever take this land away from me, how he's going to take my name out of there? Who's going to take it out of there? The government? United States? No, they can't take it. My name is going to be there because that land belonged to me under my grandfather. It's over there at El Capitan. They call that Anaskit Point. He also owned Halibut Harbor. He used to live in between those two places, Cape Hole, Warren Island, all over around up out there. Just like what my auntie say. They put up Indian grub and everything like that, just like what our brother said over there. They used to get their own harvest, like potatoes, rutabagas, and everything like that. Now the government is pushing us around for over something that we own. Now I'm going to say this much. Where was the government the time Angoon and Huna, Juneau, Ketchikan, Heidelberg, Craig, Wrangell, Petersburg, all those people was out there the time they had that war with the Russian? Where was our governor? We didn't have any until the United States put that, bought this land from Russian. Now they start pushing us around. But he ain't supposed to do it. He signed the agreement for that man promising the Russian that he won't push the Indians around. They already told him. Maybe you guys can get it right from the library or somewhere. It's in one of those libraries or some place around there. There's no other way a person will understand until they see for themselves on that book they got. By rights, Sitka's supposed to be a capital city. Or in other words, they're pushing us. We have to fight back and let the government know where's our agreement they signed, the United States have. Let's look into it. Get together on it. That's what we'll make people understand that we're stronger than them when we get that agreement. That way they will get everything back. I look at it this way. I have said a lot of things about it before. Like this land claim we got. I worked my foot clean down to the bottom trying to get this land claim. There's quite a few people have turned me down on it. Outside of that, we sent our delegates right from Klawak and loaned some money to Craig, Heidelberg, and they went from there that year when this land claim settlement came through. We loaned some money for them to go to the A&B convention that time. And that's how they won it. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have got it. Well, in other words, right now we're looking forward for that money to come to us. Now, where was C-Alaska that time? The time the money was given to us, first thing they informed us, C-Alaska. Now our share is gone to them. I don't even know today, right now, that settlement was given. I never even seen a penny out of it. They don't even tell me how much money I was given. Just about 6 months ago, I got this money right from the oil money that was given. That's the only one I seen. But the rest of it, I never seen it. Outside of that, I'm looking forward for me to see one big check come to me again. I got three shares of myself. The Sea Alaska and the Village Corporation. So I look at it this way. I'm going to look for that book that I'm talking about. And I'd like to see most of you guys get and look for this book that the United States have signed, that agreement. They got the agreement that was signed by the United States for us to be left alone. Whatever we want, they're supposed to give it to us instead of them fighting against us. Like what my auntie said here, most of those people that's in the Sea Alaska, they put themselves in it. We never put them in there. They put themselves in it. In other words, right now, today, there's people coming down from down south, just like those hippies she was talking about. I look at it this way, why they come up from down there where we got our local people over here that can go work in the cold storage and cannery and all that. And here they come up. I seen a lot of tents up there behind that cannery. I looked them all over, all those people. When they made all that money, they go back up in there and they sleep and they go to work next day. When they got paid off at the end of the can, when the can was shut down, where they at? They don't pay no tax over here in Alaska, like Ketchikan here. They take their money back down south. That's where their money go. And here they're collecting this income tax from Alaska, because they get more for it. I don't know why. Us Indians, we should get together. Not for those people to come up here for them to work over here and take our jobs away from us and all the money. It's just like taking a piece of a slice of bread out of your own home, taking all that money away from us. Outside of that, I look at it this way. If I ever went down there trying to take their job away from me, from them, what they would do? They would put me in jail because I'm working in place of them. Because they can't handle that job down there. They don't know how to work because I've been among them before. Now you put a donkey to work, he's going to stand there. You ain't going to make him work because he can't move. That's what it looked like. The time I was young, I worked for 50 cents a day. And dollar a fish, keen salmon, every keen salmon you caught. I worked right through them, 1932. 34. They started with 15 cents a pound, keen salmon. Now today, look what that fish is worth now, one fish. It's almost $200 if you catch one. Look at sockeyes, how much it cost. Humpies used to be nickel that time. Dog used to be 50 cents. Coal used to be 50 cents too. Sockeye was 75 that time. Now today, look what sockeye costs now. Dogs, coho, keen salmon. Look what the hell of it worth now today. You catch 160 pound, how much money you get out of it. Them days it was $1 a fish. 1935, you spend $10, you go to the store, how many truckload you gonna take home? Today you spend $50. It's just like spending 50 cents today. And we don't do nothing about it. I look at it this way. I'm not talking for myself, but I'm talking to you folks to understand why we have to sit there and let these people tell us what to do. We should go and fight back, talk back to them. You don't have to be afraid. He's the judge right there. I can talk with him, argue with him. We get into fight. It won't hurt him. It won't hurt me. Now, I can talk to the president just like what I'm doing right now. I ain't afraid to talk. I give them their own word, too. I feel the same way. The only thing in between me and the president and the judge, governor, is a human being. It's just the judge, the government, president. That's the only thing that he's got behind his name. Outside of that, he's a human being like me. I ain't afraid to talk. I give him the works too. I gotta talk for myself. Outside of that, I feel the same way he does. He hate me, I hate him too. That's the way I look at it. Thank you, sir.
That's all I have to say. Larry Johnson from with Cape Fox Corporation. I was asked to make a statement for our corporation tonight, and it's prepared, and I'll start out, you know, the impact of the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act passed by United States Congress in 1971. Has been reviewed and discussion by the Executive Committee of Cape Fox Corporation. And our observations and comments on ANSCA from a village corporation point of view are as follows. Number one, there is an unclear tax exempt status regarding ANSCA lands that have created significant management problems, cost, and conflicts with the local and state tax authorities. And number two, there has not been adequate ongoing communication with the non-native community regarding ANSCA. The new land ownership status and its current and potential impact on social economic structure of our community and the state. Three, there was developed by words and deeds of those that negotiated ANSCA, as well as those of us that have been in leadership positions for the years following, the creation of unrealistic expectations by our Native people. Too much was and is expected too soon from ANSCA. Number four, our cultural and experience factors made it difficult for a corporation to deal with competitive business activity. Decision-making process as business, owner-management relationships, cash flow planning, accounting profits, corporate tax planning, are all areas that we have paid very dearly as owners to gain experience. We have been actively engaged in business 5 years now, and we expect it will take another 10 years to achieve a reasonable comfort level. Number five, the considerable delays and problems of conveyance of land to our corporation and the cost involved in the selection acquisition process has been very large. We have found it necessary to protect our rights, and that legal costs resulting has far exceeded what any one might imagine when the Claims Act was passed. I'm sure Sciatica will attest to that. The temporary restrictions placed on the corporation activities in the early stages of existence should have perhaps had a greater amount of time for those restrictions to remain in place. The learning process was and continues to be slow, but steady progress has been in evidence. Number seven, the geographic and cultural differences between the various Native people covered by ANSCA was not adequately dealt with in the previous provisions of the Act. As an example, a 14C3 providing for reconveyance of land to the Native villages does not make much sense when applied to Southeastern Alaska villages already had land ownership. Number eight, the interaction and integration of Native people with non-Native people in social and economic activity has begun to show basic improvement. Certainly some jealousy and envy impacts have been felt, but we believe will decline within the next few years as the community-wide benefits of ANSCA becomes more apparent. Number nine, ANSCA has provided Native people with business and economic experience. Dealing with profit circumstance as well as losses experience has provided a... We are still learning in these areas, and some of our lessons have been expensive. In the eyes of all our people, particularly the young ones, the need and an opportunity for higher education has grown. These perceptions have, to a major degree, have been fed by a corporate activity that provides a sense of pride and hope, as well as displaying to the older shareholders a clear understanding to the benefits of higher education. Number 10 is Kay Fox has paid in cash to her shareholders in excess of $7,000 to the original shareholder. The benefits from these can best be analyzed through testimony by our own individual shareholders. Number 11, substantial indirect non-cash shareholder benefits have been implemented by our corporation through a non-profit corporation organized and sustained by our for-profit corporation. These activities are beginning to impact our community. The use of resources generated by our for-profit corporation in support of locally designed and controlled cultural heritage activity and village improvements have fostered to us a feeling of true self-determination. However, we in corporate leadership positions recognize that these achievements, as well as the others yet to come, can only be maintained if our profit corporation can reach and maintain a level of economic stability. We are not at that point as of this date. Number 12 is the legal requirements of ANSCA to provide equal benefits as a profit corporation to all shareholders has on several occasions been in direct conflict with shareholder requests and corporation desire to provide immediate benefits to a limited number of elder shareholders. And I might say that we have started a program in Cape Fox that through our nonprofit organization that where our shareholders will get some benefit through, you know, normally in a corporation you have to treat all shareholders equal, but we have a problem of trying to create some kind of program for the elderly people that have been working on this ANSCA program since they were young people, and now all our corporations are having a problem trying to deal with this, and I think we've solved it in a small way. In summary, we would suggest that from our experience regarding Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, there should have been a greater amount of time for our people to become acquainted in competing with the business world. There should have been more effort in identifying in the original law the regional and native people. We suggest in future legislation additional provisions for dealing with the high cost of land acquisition and protection of our legal rights under the Act. We recommend an opportunity for the use of the limited portions, say 10% of the assets conveyed under ANSCA, to be used for culturally preferred purposes and elder programs without creating conflict with corporate law. Certainly, we would encourage all Native people who may be pursuing similar goals to ANSCA to be aware that instant solution to the individual's problems or rapid tribal leap forwards would more than likely not occur. Just as it took our people 100 years of constant struggle to politically achieve the Alaska Native Settlement Claims Act, we appreciate that it will take a generation at least to maximize our ability to benefit from ANSCA, and after that, constant effort to maintain these benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, and my thanks to the Executive Committee for that statement. You mentioned toward the end of your statement that you referred to the difficulty of corporations establishing programs to provide benefits for the elders under existing corporate law, and you suggested an amendment. But you also said you had already done something to assist the elders, and I didn't quite catch what it was.
The deal is that we organized a nonprofit organization, a nonprofit arm of Cape Fox, and through that program, we have the elderly set up different programs that will culturally enhance the Native people in Saxon, such as beadworks and Native dances, and they pass the history of the Native people on to the younger people. In that way, we give them a small amount of cash that would help them through.
I see. Could you leave the statement with us? Is that possible?
No. Oh, yeah. There's no problem.
And thank you very much. And the commission's been invited to Saxman tomorrow morning, and we're going to hear.
The reason why I was here because I have to work tomorrow. Yeah. So.
Well, we're glad you came down, and we'll be out there tomorrow morning.
Thank you very much.
Would anyone else who hasn't had a chance to speak yet at these hearings like to do so now?
Question.
Yes, please.
At the end of all this interview, after you travel all over, how is it going to benefit us? What are you going to do for everyone that testified? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to write a report based on the testimony that I've heard. I hope that report will reflect what Native people all over Alaska have said and will point the way towards solving some of the problems that have been raised. I don't promise to do any more than that. And I hope I can do that at least. But I do promise to send to everybody who's testified a copy of my report. And as I said last night, that report will be made available, will be made public in the summer of 1985. So I think, though, that these issues are really for Alaska Natives to sort out. I was asked by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People to come here And we've been well received everywhere we've gone. Alaska Native have been coming forward, and our meetings have been well attended for the most part. And I think that when my report comes out, then it will be something that you can use to decide what you're going to do about these questions.
The reason I brought out all our fishing and hunting rights on the canneries, a lot of our shareholders are very capable of working. Some of us lost our power patrol permit, and therefore some, I'm using myself as an example, there's some in the same situation. All right, they're able-bodied people that work, men and women. And they do not get hired to the corporation. They bring all non-natives into work. And Sea Alaska has issued quite a few numbers that they employ. But this is only in the summer. And I think they even count the heads on a fishing boat that sell fish to them. So that's not year-round. And all our native corporations, all over Alaska, is in the same situation. That They do not work or in the logging camps either. You gotta be some kind of professional graduate to work in these logging. I used to cut trees. I was a real cowboy. If I wasn't so overweight, I'd be still punching around too. But I'm experienced in fishing, and we used to cut wood for our wood stoves a long time ago when I was just a teenager. And we learned how to fall trees from there. Now you go to Sea Alaska, any of the corporations, even our Cape Fox corporations, you gotta be experienced. We've been cutting trees for years, and our people are capable of working and supporting themselves without importing a lot of people from out of state to take over the jobs where we should be working and supporting ourselves. If this was going on, if our people were working, they wouldn't have any gripes. I have 14 children, 26 grandchildren, and by golly, they'll never work. None of my children are working with any of the corporations. It's all dependent on fishing because they're not qualified to log. I have a son that's experienced logger, heavy equipment operator. No, our corporation went higher because, first of all, he's not in our corporation because he lives in Ketchikan. And he tried to see Alaska. He couldn't get a job there either. Now he's out fishing. And here a short pants, dirty looking white man come in. I'm a logger. He gets hired right now. And among our own people, there's discrimination among our own native people. And this is what gripes me. I know I'll never see that money, but by golly, what's my land is my land, and I'm gonna sell it to the biggest lawyer in the world.
Who would like to speak this evening?
Judge Berger, my name is Mary Jones from Ketchikan. I am a shareholder of Sea Alaska and Kavelco. And like Ed Thomas said yesterday, I'm also a person resident here with many hats. I served on the Ketchikan RE Council for a term and served as a chairman for half of my term. You're probably aware that the name Ketchikan is a Tlingit word belonging to my grandfather's people of the Tungus tribe. And the name was given to Ketchikan Creek. We have, of the Tungus tribe, there are very few older people living, and Esther Shea here is one of the members in the matrilineal line. I'm a descendant by through my grandfather. I felt very optimistic about this hearing after. Am I putting off that off?
No, we can just carry on.
I felt real optimistic about this hearing. Living out in North Tungus, the only TV station we had at the time was CBC of Canada. And we watched with a lot of enthusiasm and excitement when you carried on the hearings in regard to the Native people of Canada. Probably more exciting, the fact that the Native people won their battle not to have the gas line through their country. And I hope this hearing will be a plus for our people, because we are the grassroots people. Our local editor once said that if you want to attend any type of meeting, is to live in Ketchikan. And that's true. When my husband and I were both pretty involved, we can be gone about four nights a week just to attend meetings. Probably, for me at least, the one disappointment from last night and through today is that in trying to tally up elected Native leaders just in the Ketchikan area, and probably including Saxman, we could have up to 80 elected officers. Most of them deal in social aspects of our lives, such as health and education. I feel that we are not complementing each other. We should be complementing the profit corporations. I think what a lot of us are foreseeing is that both federal and state are looking at Alaska in that they feel that we are rich Native people, that we are a rich state, in that funding will eventually be cut to Alaska. Last year we experienced, I've been serving on the health board for several years, and what we experienced in the state last year was a cut in welfare funds. I'm not a true believer in the welfare system, but it was discrimination to the Native people in cutting the funds to the Native people because of what Washington, D.C. views us as being wealthy. I think our various organizations, and that would include the Sea Alaska Advisory Board, Clink and Haida, Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood, the RA Council. We have various Native organizations, and on to Saxman with their village, the RA Council, the ANB, and Clink and Haida as well, that just in Native leadership alone, we would have done well, I think, to have at least half of them here, because these are concerns for all of us in the social aspects of our people. I belong to the Alaska Native Sisterhood Auxiliary of the Native Alaska Native Brotherhood since 1966. And historically, I feel that the land claims fight started in 1912 with the founding of the Alaska Native Brotherhood, which is the oldest Indian organization in the United States. It was for the sole purpose of equality, fairness, and so that the people could Pete in the Western culture. I don't have the preamble of the Alaska Native Brotherhood, but the Founding Fathers felt that we should abolish our customs and language so that we could compete in this world. On to 1929, the convention that was held in Haines was the actual push for the land claims battle. I talked briefly with Al Widmark and asked him what he thought the originators of the idea would think now with all the struggles, with all the vast amounts of money that are being lost, what they would think of what the land claims is all about now. Initially, the people who instigated the land claims, there was a battle on the floor, and it was initially voted down not to pursue. The issue was brought back on the floor again, and when the people felt that this was going to be for the betterment of the Native, their children and their grandchildren, it threw a different light on the picture. William Paul, I didn't know him in his prime of life. He was already elderly, but he was still quite a fighter right up until his death. We were always curious with his being the only attorney, so we asked him one time why he became an attorney. He had such strong religious beliefs that he was going to become a minister. But because of the struggles, the injustices, he felt he could do more for his people by becoming an attorney. So he was the strongest supporter in all the legal aspects. And I think I have to get up on my soapbox at this time to laud the women. It was through all the struggles of bake sales and dues, money from the purses, to get people like William Paul back to Washington in regard to the fight. Ironically, and it's been mentioned before, we're sitting in William Paul building. Joining William Paul building is Ziegler building. In the 1930s, when we had the school integration segregation battle, it was Ziegler against William Paul. The Alaska Native Brotherhood, at no cost to Nettie Jones, took on this battle. And when my husband was serving on the school board and Nettie passed away, they had a special resolution commemorating her. So I feel William Paul would be happy we're sitting in his building tonight. We have talked briefly about, I think it's come up 2-3 times, about our native languages and our culture. It was such a belief back in the early days that the Indian leaders felt that they were doing the right thing in supporting the church and the government to abolish the language and the culture. Dr. Krause of the University of Alaska feels that, well, he believes, I shouldn't say he feels, but he believes that you kill a language in one generation and it's gone forever. He has anticipated in documentation that by the year 2033, the Tlingit and Haida languages will be totally gone. I don't speak or understand my language. I come from both the Tlingit and the Tsimshian. My parents were believers in the church and the government that this would be the best thing for their children. So I, in return, have nothing to pass on to my children. So it's kind of sad the fact that within my lifetime, I will see, I will hopefully live the anticipated 75 years, what scientists say, but I will probably live to see the languages completely gone. I favor the Sealaska Heritage Foundation as far as the taping and video. It's commendable what they're doing on the annual gatherings, but in order for us to fully advance in the dances and the languages is far surpassed, according to an anthropologist. All we could do is preserve, and I feel that we're hanging on by a mere thread. Because of the corporate demands, our regional corporations have to comply to survive, whether they are board members who are qualified by training or by experience. I think because of all the demands placed on them as board members, that the social aspects of our daily living have to be overlooked. And I feel that is one of our major concerns in federal and state funding cuts, that we're not ready. Our corporations are not ready because they are geared for the business world. As far as our regional corporations, I think we have asked ourselves if we have demanded of them to be strong in the business world and to be frugal. We receive reports on the millions of dollars in losses, yet they allow such large salaries for one another. We as shareholders have no control on the voting, on the decision making, and though we are concerned about the losses, financial losses, we don't know the dealings of the corporate world, and we know are controlled by corporate lawyers within the regional corporations. There are other priorities in the business world other than fish and timber, and I think we need to have input into the corporation on what these priorities are. Within our local community, with so many various Native organizations, and also regionally, like Tlingit and Haida, there are so many duplications and also opposing views. I am a Sealaska shareholder, and I served on the RE Council. And we in Ketchikan took an opposing view of the borax mine, mainly because we wanted input into the plans and what protection we're going to have for the salmon streams. By the same token, I, as a Sealaska shareholder, we received word from Juneau that it was in the paper published that Sealaska had endorsed borax, and yet I, wearing the Sealaska shareholder, had no input into it. So we're sitting here as A&B and Clinton Haida and RA Council voting against the concept and what we feel was going to be devastating to our salmon streams. We had no input. I think another concern we have had historically, both in Congress and probably both in our state legislature, is we can have support of specific terms, but by the time we have a change in the government, whether it be the governor, we'll have a change in support and have new bills to kill previous. And I think this is where we need to, as Native organizations and groups, not only work to complement each other, but also work to see that these issues carry on from year to year to our advantage. As mentioned, Ketchikan is of the Tungus tribe. There were a few of us who met with Stevens when he had come around traveling in regard to the land claims. And it was asked of him why Ketchikan wasn't on the land claims bill. He said Ketchikan was on the initial draft, but somehow eliminated on down to the final draft. So we had a lot of opposition, plus strong local political positions against it, and they won. I don't have anything further to add. Just looking forward to the overview of this hearings and hope that what grassroots input we have will be of benefit to the people.
Thank you, Mrs. Jones. Thank you very much. If there's anyone else who'd like to speak tonight, I'm inclined to, it being 9 o'clock, I'm inclined to adjourn until tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. I think I should thank all of you for coming tonight and for your presentations and say that we will be reconvening at Saxman tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to hear testimony there, and then we'll be coming back here to the forum room at KCC at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to resume, and then we'll complete our hearings here tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and you're all invited, of course. My thanks again for coming today, and no doubt we'll see some of you at least tomorrow.